good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, June the 8th, 2016, 1:15 coming up on 1:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears, your host, and just want to give a little quick reminder. Tomorrow on the program, Thursday, at 12:15 p.m., we will be joined by Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown. So tune in tomorrow, 12:15 p.m., Senator Sherrod Brown, and we also want to thank Dr. Art Uhlein from the Today Show for being on in hour number one today discussing Alzheimer's disease. A very frank and interesting conversation, as this one will be this hour. This is weird how things happened. We booked this interview about a week and a half ago, right before Memorial Day, or it might have been on Memorial Day, and serendipitous how it happens the night after Hillary Clinton clinches the nomination, becomes the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party for the 2016 presidential election. Our guest today, a former White House volunteer aide, who you might remember on March 15th, 1998, was on the TV program 60 Minutes and alleged that Bill Clinton had sexually assaulted her on November 29th, 1993, during his first term as president. She currently runs the website, A Scandal a Day. You can search that out and find that. The guest today, and I'm proud to welcome to these microphones, Kathleen Willey. Kathleen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Kathleen, last night, you said we didn't plan this, didn't know it was going to happen this way, but did you watch the coverage last night?
I watched it briefly just to keep up with all of the incoming results, and when I saw her come on the stage, I muted the television. I couldn't listen to her. I just couldn't listen to her.
Well, I want to get into the backstory here, because then we'll come to maybe the reason you couldn't listen to her for people who are not sure of this. And again, I thank you for doing this. But I do want to start way back. I want to talk about your childhood. Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. Great, best time of the century to grow up. You know, during the 50s and 60s, and went to Catholic school, you know, practically raised by nuns, and went on to, I was a flight attendant for TWA back in the days when flying was a privilege and first class, and everybody, you know, was treated well, and they treated everybody, and that was a wonderful experience. I got to travel all over the world, and then I got married and had two children, and I was a stay-at-home mom, and I, as they got older, and I found more time to give, I started volunteering in politics. My late father-in-law was Senator Pro Tem of the State Senate in Virginia for 35 years, and so we were always kind of involved in politics on that level. So I started out locally, and then I got into state politics, and then national politics, and the rest is history.
What was it about politics that made you want to stay in that field?
I think what got me interested in politics was when JFK was elected. It was a very big deal in my community, in my Catholic community, and I remember the nuns had the TV on election day and on the day of the inaugural, and I was extremely interested in that campaign, and I was very young at the time, and that's when I got the bug, And I just was interested in playing a part in politics and trying to help the person whom I thought would be best for, you know, our localities and, you know, our city and our state, and then on a national level.
What was it about JFK that drew you in? Was it just the Catholicism?
I just think, you know, he was young, and he had new ideas, and of course, I'll be honest, I mean, he was Catholic, and that was a big deal back then, and I was, and so that got my attention. I just thought that he was just so charismatic, and he seemed to be extremely bright, and everybody, from what I could tell, he used to draw huge crowds, and I was just really taken with him and his wife, and his life. And I studied up about him. I always try to do as much research as I can, before I vote for anyone. But I was certainly taken by him.
Now, in the presidential elections you have voted for in your life, obviously JFK was a Democrat. Do you align more with the Democratic Party or the Republican Party?
Well, that changed. I voted for JFK, and I can't remember who came after that.
Johnson ran.
Didn't he decide not to run?
He did have one election with Goldwater.
Yeah, so I guess I voted for him, although I wasn't all that crazy about him.
And then Nixon ran again.
I voted for Reagan because I just thought that I liked his vision. I'm trying to think who else. Then after that, it just mostly was the Democrats.
What about the... So after that, were you a fan of the Bushes?
Well, not so much Senior Bush, but I liked. But you've got to remember, that was after what happened to me. After what happened to me, and the Democrats turned on me, I had a whole different opinion.
Right.
About the Democrat. I got after all of the work that I had done, and all of the volunteer work that I had done. I mean, I volunteered in Doug Wilder's office when he was lieutenant governor, and I volunteered on his campaign, and I volunteered on his inaugural, and I helped raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for him and his campaign. And a lot of other Democrats in the city and in the state. And after that happened to me, not one single Democrat supported me. Not one single one. Not one that I knew personally, or one that I had worked for or volunteered for or raised money for in the state. Not one single one came to my aid.
That being said, it's kind of interesting because a lot of talk was about Hillary Clinton last night, but really the only person to ever beat Bill or Hillary in any election was a Democrat, President Obama. Are you a fan of President Obama's?
Was I?
Yeah.
No.
No, not a fan. Any particular reason besides the Democratic issue?
I just saw through him from day one. I just had an intuition about him from day one that he just was, inexperienced, a good orator, and that was it.
That being
I saw no vision, I saw no reasonably good ideas. It was just all talk and no action. He was very good at that, in my point, but I just noticed that from day one.
That being said, how did you end up getting a job at the White House as a volunteer aide at the White House?
Well, because I had my late husband and I had started Virginia for Clinton after we met Bill Clinton at a fundraiser in Charlottesville, and it was a fundraiser for Doug Wilder that I had helped put together. And it was at the Kluge Estate in Charlottesville, and that's when we met him. And we really liked him. And so after that, we talked to some of the people on his campaign, and we started Virginia for Clinton, and we gave him office space in my husband's law firm, in his suite of offices, and we worked really hard and to raise a lot of money for him, and we raised a lot of money for him. And after, and then I volunteered and on the inaugural and the gala, and Elwin went with it. And about a month after that, a call went out from the party that they needed volunteers, and especially they were being inundated with mail from people all over the world, and they really needed help. So I thought, well, I'm an empty nester, and my children were off in college, and I thought, well, this would be a good time for me. So I commuted from Richmond to Washington, and I started working in that department. And then from there, I went to the social office in the East Wing, which has always and historically been the First Lady's office, where her office was, until Her Highness came along and decided she was going to be co-president, and she wanted her office in the West Wing. So we rarely saw her. She had absolutely no interest whatsoever in state dinners or place settings or flowers or anything. I mean, it was funny. We used to put together mock-ups of different place settings for her to pick for different state dinners. And she really didn't care. And so most of us did. There was some paid staff, but most of us were volunteers. And I made some good friends when I was up there. And we planned a lot of arrival ceremonies and the Easter egg roll and all of the Christmas events. And it was a busy time. It was a great time. I mean it was unbelievable for me. I mean, to have gotten that far and to be working in the White House, it was like a dream come true. And anyway, so that started in March of 93, and then in the fall, in November of 93, my husband, who was an attorney, got himself into some serious legal trouble, and which I knew nothing about, and until he finally told me 2 weeks before he'd been given a deadline to pay back from clients a huge amount of money. And so it was Thanksgiving weekend, and we sat our children down, and we told them some of what was going on. And my plan was to go to Washington and just ask to see the president and tell him that I needed a paying job. And I had been highly criticized for going straight to the president, but he was a friend of ours. I mean, it's as simple as that. And I called and I asked if he had any time at all, and they squeezed me in, and I knew I had a very short window, and I went in to see him. I'd been trying to reach my husband all day long. He wasn't in his office. They'd been trying to find him. I'd been trying to find him. I was, I was just panicked and upset, and when I went in to see him, I was upset, and I told him some of what was going on. I knew I had a very short window. And I was visibly, I was trying real hard not to cry, but I was crying. I was upset. And so he said, well, how about if we go back? I've got a little kitchen in the back, and I'll fix you a cup of coffee, and you can tell me more of what's going on. Well, I didn't think twice about it. And he did that. And he said, well, let's go sit here in my study, in my private study. Well, as I found out later, that was the study where he and Monica used to have their little meetings. And he went in and sat down. I never sat down. I just kind of leaned up against the door jamb, and I just told him what was going on, and that, you know, I really needed his help. And I said, I'm not asking for a job here, or, if there's some federal job that you could get me in Richmond, that would be great. But at that point in my life, he was my best shot at getting a job, as quickly as possible, because we were in crisis mode. And I just, like I said, I knew I had a very short window, and I'm not going to go into all the details of it. I've done it a jillion times, and it's so upsetting. But I thanked him for his time. He asked me a few questions about what was going on in the social office and how things were going there, and I got up to leave, and the next thing I knew, he had me backed into a corner, hands all over me and whispering in my ear, and I was so taken aback. My first thought was, what in the world is he doing? And then his aide, Andrew Friendly, started knocking on the door and saying, Mr. President, you've got a meeting waiting for you. And I thought, I'm thinking to myself, good, this is going to distract him. It didn't distract him in the slightest. And, he's a big man, and I'm not. I mean, I'm only 5'2", my mind's racing, and I'm wondering what's going on. And I'm thinking to myself, can you slap the President of the United States? Is the Secret Service going to swarm in here, or... how am I going to do this? And how am I going to get out of this? And luckily, and I say luckily, very luckily for me, after hearing the horror stories that I've heard from other women, Andrew banged on the door again and reminded him, Mr. President, you're late for your meeting, and people, they're waiting for you outside the Oval Office. And at that point, I got out of his clutches and hit the door and got myself straightened up as best I could. And I just remember thinking to myself, dear God, who's going to be waiting on the other side of this door who's going to see me? Because I know that I'm going to look, probably disheveled. And, I'm trying to get myself straightened up before I open the door. And sure enough, there stands Lloyd Benson and Leon Panetta and another woman who is a member of a cabinet member, and I can't remember her, Laura Tyson, maybe, I'm thinking. But anyway, I just couldn't get out of there fast enough. I just couldn't. And unfortunately, that was bad enough as it was, but unfortunately, my husband took his own life that day, and we didn't find out until the following day. I mean, I spent most of the night, as soon as I could get on the train and get home, I spent half the night driving around town looking for him and some of his old haunts, and I never found him. And then we got a call the next day. He had gone to some remote county, a good over an hour away, and walked into the woods and sat down, beside this on a tree stump beside a marsh, and shot himself. I mean, the place had no meaning to me or us whatsoever. And maybe it did to him, but it didn't to me.
That being said, it sounds like a horribly traumatic day that most of us have never went through. But once we know, obviously, what had happened with your husband, that he had committed suicide, unfortunately. You also have this thing with Bill Clinton that you alleged happened. Do you tell anybody? When do you tell somebody, and who do you tell?
I told some good friends what had happened, and I also had made friends with Linda Tripp when I was working at the White House, and I... I saw her right after it happened, and I told her what had happened, and I told her about it. And I never told my family. I didn't tell anybody except for some good friends that, you know, all of whom I thought I could trust. And but not 10 women, you know, not 10 people, maybe 3 people. And and I never intended to tell that story, you know. I never intended to tell that story, and I did eventually, you know, get a job at the White House in the counsel's office, and you know, of course, all the feminists who should have been on my side who didn't. I mean, if I called the women of now and the Bella Abzugs and all of those other women once, I called them 20 times and never, ever got a response from any of them, not once. And remember, I'm one of the, you know, party faithful. And, you know, they, I got a part-time job in counsel's office and, you know, and of course, years later, when the story came out, well, why, you know, if all that happened, well, why did she want to go back and get a job there? Well, I didn't get a job, you know, in his office or right outside of his office. I just got a job at the White House, and I needed a job. I mean, especially after my husband died. When he died, I mean, he left me in horrible financial trouble. I mean, I faced lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. And, you know, I had just been a stay-at-home mom who didn't finish college. And, you know, I had a lot going against me. Next thing I knew, Paula Jones's attorneys found me. They were looking for all the women they could find after what he did to her. And they heard my story. As it turned out, Linda Tripp had been working in conjunction with them. And then they came after me with a vengeance, and they subpoenaed me. And, you know, and my lawyer and I, God love him, Dan Gecker, we tried for months to get out of that. I wanted no parts of that whatsoever. I wanted nothing to do with it. I didn't want to tell the story. I didn't want to be forced to tell the story. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But, you know, a federal subpoena is a federal subpoena. And you know, I had to go. But once my name came out, and it was the last day of July of 1997, is when things started getting real weird around here. And I don't live in a neighborhood. I live in a very rural area. And it's like a private community. And my neighbors aren't next-door neighbors, and we don't have sidewalks. I mean, you know, we've got private gravel roads, and we're spread apart. And I am very, very hard to find. And I started getting strange phone calls and hang-ups in the middle of the night, and then my beloved 13-year-old cat disappeared, and, you know, he just went out one night and never came home, which just was not like him. And my German Shepherd, who was my soulmate, you know, my protector, who never left my side, completely disappeared in thin air for 3 days. I have no idea where she went, where she gone. I mean, she was just gone. And I mean, she had that intuitive instinct to know that I needed to be protected, and she just knew. And she just never left my side. And one day, she just was gone. And I mean, I spent 3 days in the freezing cold, searching the woods for around me, and on the fourth morning, I couldn't sleep. You know, I woke up. It was dark, and I woke up, and there she was on the step, right there at the kitchen, waiting for me to let her in. And she didn't look like she wasn't dirty, or her, you know, her nails didn't look like she'd been trying to claw away out of something. Oh, I have no idea. You know, I have no idea whatsoever. I came home on the 4th of July of 1998, and this was after. This is after I had gone in, you know, and I became a cooperating witness with Ken Starr. I mean, it just kept going on and on and on.
Well, that, Kathleen, I want to ask
you. Go ahead.
I want to ask you, because just to clear this up for people, now, how did, if you had not told anybody, how did they find you to subpoena you?
I told Linda Tripp.
You did what?
I told Linda Tripp.
Oh, you told Linda Tripp. Okay.
And Linda was working with the feds, you know, with the Monica thing. But before that, as I understand, she was also working, you know, with Paula Jones's attorney, because she hated the Clintons. She was a Bush person. She was a holdover from the Bushes, and they kept her on.
That
and she just hated the Clintons.
Clearly. And now, that being said, when you tell somebody like Linda Tripp, who clearly hated the Clintons, obviously did what she did to Monica Lewinsky, and I don't think Monica has ever forgiven her for that. And Linda Tripp even went on, I believe it was Larry King's show, and discredited you to some extent.
No, actually, that's wrong.
That's wrong. Okay. Set it right.
She painted me in a very bad picture. And when she was being interviewed and she was doing all this work with the feds, and then later on in the summer of 98, she went, it was her, I think it was one of her first one-on-one interviews. It was the entire hour of Larry King, and Larry King said, "What do you think of Kathleen Willey?" And Linda said, "I think she's a very honest woman." I just sat here and I just thought, "What?"
Right, I guess
I was so shocked when she said, I was relieved, because, you know, I was relieved because, you know, what I think, you know, in my life, in times of crisis and when things get tense, and I've always kind of used my sense of humor to get through things, and maybe she just looked at that as, you know, as my being happy or thrilled, or, you know, but it was one of these, "You're not going to believe this one," kind of story. And when she turned around and said that on Larry King, you know, I couldn't believe it. I was shocked.
I want to clear this up, because I did have that wrong. The story was that her grand jury testimony, when you were brought up, she had said that she claimed regarding an inappropriate sexual advances, she stated that you appeared excited about the alleged assault, and then
and
she
happy and gleeful, and I heard it all.
And then she went on Larry King after the Monica Lewinsky thing, and said,
right,
in February of 99, then she said you were an honest person. Now,
yes.
That being said, don't you find it peculiar that Linda Tripp, under grand jury testimony, says one thing, but on national television, where you're not under a lie detector or you can't face crimes, says another? What do you make of that?
I can't speak for Linda.
Yeah, I understand.
I can't speak for Linda. Think about this. I mean, I can understand why Monica would despise Linda. Okay, I get that, because I think she felt like she really betrayed her. But in all reality, and not sounding like I'm a conspiratorial theorist, Linda Tripp saved Monica Lewinsky's life when she told her to keep that dress. And because I think, and I had heard from extremely credible sources, because, I mean, I went through 75 to 100, you know, hours of interviews with the FBI, and I mean exhausting. But you know, I had heard from very credible people that, you know, after they started calling her a stalker, they were calling me. I mean, we've got all kinds of proof of what the Clinton secret police had planned for me.
Now I want to get
all of these things that they were doing.
I want to get.
And I walked into my house one day and found a perfectly healthy 1-year-old cat dead in my house.
Now this
on my deck.
That
these are the kinds of things. But the you know the worst thing, and this is what. This is why I'm out here today, okay? It is no longer about the infidelities and indiscretions and the adultery and the girlfriends and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. This is about a woman who's running for president, who takes the steps that she took using campaign funds and probably foundation donations to intimidate and scare and terrorize women who just happened to cross her husband's path, rather than get him help or kick him out, whatever. That was the path that she chose. Now, I don't want that woman to be president. And on top of that, I've told this story before, and I think this is important, I've gotten letters from other women who've written on my website who've told me extreme, very, very similar stories about what he's done to them, and they're still afraid to come, to go public. Even now, they are afraid to go public, and you know what? I don't blame them at all. I do not blame them one single bit.
Now, Kathleen,
I wish they would.
Well, Kathleen, something that's kind of interesting.
Some of them have said, have given me permission to tell their stories if I remove any identifying information, and I checked them out. I vetted all of them with a very reputable private investigator, and so I know they're telling the truth. And but the thing that I would like America to hear from one, you know, regular American woman is that 2 days before my deposition in the Paula Jones case, I was out here in my community walking early one morning, and like I said, it's a very rural area, and a man approached me who I thought, I had met everybody out here yet. I was new out here, and I hadn't met everybody out here, and he looked like he was jogging, and I was walking with my dogs, and he asked me, he came up and he called me by name and he asked me if I'd my cat. And I had put signs up of his picture and he had his name tag on. His name was Bullseye, and I didn't put my name on the signs, but I put on it. And he said, "Did you ever find your cat?" And I said, "No, I didn't." I said, "I'm still brokenhearted about it after all these months." I said, "I still think every time I drive down the driveway, I'm going to see him sitting on the front porch," and I thought he's just gone. And that's when he said, "Yeah, he was a really nice cat." And that's when I said, "Well, do you have him, or have you seen him, or did you see him, or do you know where he might be?" Or, and he just looked at me again. He said, "Yeah, he was a really nice cat." Was a really nice cat. And that's when I thought to myself, there's something up here. And then he said, he asked me how my children were, by name, by their addresses. They lived in two different cities. They were in college. He knew what they were doing. No, that's a con. Then he asked me about the children, two children of a good friend, by their names, asked me how they were doing, and then he did something even more heinous that I have not been able to talk about to this day, and hopefully maybe one day I'll be able to talk about it.
This gentleman,
and I'm not trying to sound dramatic, I'm just telling the truth. And
But Kathleen, and how
I,
do
you
we?
You know, at that point, I just said, "What do you want? What do you want? What do you want?" And I was really getting afraid because I thought to myself, I really did. I thought, "Well, I'm going to die right here, and nobody's going." It was early in the morning, and nobody's going to find me for the next hour and a half until they start heading out for work. And I started backing up, and he just looked at me. He said, "You're just not getting the message, are you?" And at that point, I just turned around and ran.
Kathleen, with only about 15 minutes left, and I'm sorry we don't have more time. I hope maybe you'll come back in the
That's
future.
Okay.
But I want to ask some questions here because I think they're questions the audience might be interested in. When that sort of thing was going on, you were being approached. I understand that you relate that to the Clintons, but a common observer might say that you had stated earlier on that your husband had been involved with some nefarious people, had gotten into some trouble. They had given him a date that you had better pay back this money or something bad is going to happen, and he committed suicide himself, that maybe these people have something to do with him. It drove your husband to suicide, which is horrible, but how do you know these people are with the Clintons and not with something to do with that?
Well, I have a number of reasons and proof. One is the late Christopher Hitchens, who was a writer, who was good friends with Sid Blumenthal. He just happened to have had lunch scheduled with him at the White House the day after my 60 Minutes interview. And Christopher and his wife went to meet Sid Blumenthal, one of the secret police, for lunch. And Christopher said, "Well, it looks like your guy's in big trouble after last night's 60 Minutes interview." And Sid Blumenthal said, "Yeah, well, Kathleen might look good today, but she's not going to look good by Friday." And Christopher, as good a friend as he was Sid, was incensed by that. And he actually offered to testify under oath in the Starr investigation. And then we have the word under oath of a PI by the name of Jared Stern, who was hired to come down here and harass me. And he did something that, you know, that's against the rules of every PI, you know, book of instructions, which he called me and left me I wasn't here. He left a message on my answer machine, gave me an anonymous name, and he just said, "I just want to let you know that you need to be very careful because there's some very bad people out to hurt you, and I will call you tomorrow night." Well, I called the FBI immediately because, you know, at that point I was a cooperating witness, and we did everything possible to trap the call when he came in, but he never called back. But he did eventually come forward and told the story and testified under oath at the grand jury. And I've met him, and I know him, and he's a friend. But he's never told me what he was told to do, and I've always been too afraid, to ask him.
Well, Kathleen,
the one thing that I do know that he testified to was, after being given his instructions, he asked his boss, "Where are these instructions coming from?" And his boss said, "The Oval Office."
That being said, Kathleen, and again, it's just because of a time thing here, but the person who got the most publicity, I would think, for accusing Bill Clinton of doing something, and I think we all know now that it was true, was Monica Lewinsky. Now, there have really never been any reports filed, and you even mentioned Linda Tripp, who was, you said, hated the Clintons. Nothing like that has happened to them. And something else...
Well, things happened to Juanita. People broke into her house. She was threatened. People were following her. A lot of people don't know this, to show you how sick Bill Clinton is. After brutally raping her, he started calling her and asking her, you know, when they could get together again.
Well,
and he wouldn't stop calling her.
Well, the question I was going there with, Kathleen, is that with all that going on, you were in the news not too long ago because Donald Trump, obviously running for president, and you have done some campaigning on his behalf. Are things in his...
No, I haven't.
Well, started the website.
Well, that was not pro-Trump. That was against Hillary.
Well, let me ask you this, then. I'm glad we cleared that up. That being said, there were reports that Trump gave you money. You said he did not. Roger Stone was the one who made that assertion. And then you said you were funded
no,
by...
No. John Roberts, with David Block, of course, of Media Matters, said that I was being paid by Donald Trump. He was helping me with my mortgage payments so that I could go out and campaign for him on the road, which is totally untrue.
Right.
I've never met him. I've never talked to him. And he's not paying me.
Right, but, and I just want to pull this up, just for the sake of honesty, because we've had Roger Stone on this show a couple times, and he did say that to Media Matters, and then he retracted it, but he did say...
Yeah, he did. He said he made a mistake.
Yeah.
He said that Donald Trump had helped me, and then he said he was wrong, I never got any help from Donald Trump.
Right, but what he said...
Believe me, I would have known it.
Right, but what he said was, he said that Donald Trump may have contributed to your GoFundMe page. He didn't know. That being said...
But then he found out that he hadn't.
Okay. That being...
Just clear that up.
Okay. That being said...
Because he said... After that statement a couple of weeks ago, that Donald Trump was helping me with my... That's when Roger Stone came out on Facebook, and he said, I made a mistake. Donald Trump did not pay Kathleen Willey any money whatsoever to help her with her mortgage. I'm fighting foreclosure.
That being said, if he did offer you money, because he's making this big speech on the Clintons on Monday, apparently. And I think he has referred to you and some others, not by name, but subliminally when he says that Bill Clinton's a rapist. That being said, if he did offer you money, would you take it to campaign for him?
Well, you know what? I have a right to make a living just like everybody else, right? You would agree with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you can take money from whoever you like.
I've had a very hard time getting a job since all of that happened. I have not been able to get a meaningful job since all of that happened, for all the reasons that you can imagine.
Right, and there's nothing. And if you say you would take it, that's okay. But I guess the question is,
I haven't been offered any money by him to go out and campaign for him. I'm not sure that I would take any money to campaign for him, but, you know, like I said, I'm a single woman, I'm supporting myself, and would I consider it? Probably. Would I take it? I'm not sure, I don't know. I can't answer it because it's not been presented to me, and, that hasn't happened, so I'm not gonna, why even sit here and talk about it?
And that's a fair answer, Now, that being said, would you have a problem if that decision was ever placed on the table, not that it has been, to take money to campaign for Donald Trump, would you have a problem campaigning for a man who has had affairs himself, admittedly, and said nefarious things about Mexicans, Muslims, things of that nature? Do you like Donald Trump?
I like Donald Trump. Donald Trump? His love of country. That's what I like about him. Does he say all the right things? No. Has he said bad things about women? Yes. Are they not very good things? Absolutely. Does he sound presidential a lot of the time? No. Not at all. But let's put it this way. He got all kinds of, all kinds of criticism for calling Megyn Kelly a bimbo. Hillary Clinton's been calling me a bimbo for 19 years. Now, it's not nice to call anybody a bimbo, but But which is worse, being called a woman being called a bimbo by another woman who just happened to be the first lady when it all started, or a man? After being called a bimbo for 19 years, I don't even hear the word anymore.
Well, that being said, and in just a few minutes left, Kathleen, this is blown right by, but Bill Clinton...
I'm certainly not going to vote for Hillary.
Okay. But that being said, that Bill Clinton is the one who you assert did the things to you. But what is the reflection...
That's not what we're talking about anymore. That's not important. Those details are not what we're talking about anymore. That's what people don't get. That's what people, and of course, you're not going to hear this from the mainstream. Why are you going back and bringing up these indiscretions? And this is what Chris Cuomo said to Donald Trump. That's not what this is about. This is about what this woman who is running for president has done to the women that he has assaulted, and sexually assaulted, and raped. And let me tell you something. But Juanita is not the only woman that he's raped, okay? I can tell you that right now.
Well, that means,
and I know that for a fact.
Right, but what's the reflection? Because he's not running for president. Hillary Clinton is.
Hillary Clinton is not worthy of being president. She's not capable of being president. You haven't heard anything yet. I've been working with a man by the name of Charles Ortel, who's been investigating the Clinton Foundation for the last 15 months, and he's uncovered a $100 billion fraud of the entire Clinton Foundation is nothing but a fraud. He was made head of the Haiti Fund. $14 billion was sent to Haiti in donations. $13 billion is gone. They are still living in squalor over there. Cholera is everywhere. He and another fraudster who lives in India by the name of Rajat Gupta bribed and this is all proven. This is all proven information. It's documented and proven. That man went to jail. They bribed a pharmaceutical company in India called Ranbaxy, and they were actually sending watered down drugs to Africa for men, women, and children with HIV/AIDS. And here are these people, these poor people, taking this medicine, thinking that it's going to help them live. While they are slowly dying. And this is the information that the people in this country need to hear, because Hillary Clinton is into all of that up to her neck. And that is why this FBI investigation is taking as long as it's taken.
Kathleen?
Because it was extended into beyond the email server thing into public corruption. And the FBI is following, and that's why they've gotten brought in 125 or 150 more agents to find where all this money is.
Kathleen, that being said, and I'm sure it'll come out, but we're at the end here, and I want to get in one question, because I think people listening at home might be saying that, you know, a lot of presidents have had extramarital affairs. JFK, certainly the man who interested you in politics, was one of them. Eisenhower, we know about that. Johnson, we know about that. Certainly we know about Clinton. Harding, We can go way back. This has happened. And Harding's was with, he had a child with the person who we didn't know about till recently. Now, that being said, and forgive me for asking this, but what, people listening to this, if they say, this is a woman who on the same day made these allegations, husband committed suicide, he was involved with nefarious people, you did like Bill Clinton, you obviously are not going to like his wife, if you felt toward him in
they
a way.
They had nothing to do with the...
I understand.
Those
just give
people had absolutely nothing to do with the intimidation and the terrorizing that happened to me. They had nothing to do with that.
But that being
said... I've just given you all the information that is proven that it was all started by Hillary Clinton.
Okay, but that being said,
and you could name JFK and Johnson and all of those men, you know, they're all known for their infidelities and all of that. But let me ask you this: how many of their wives went after the women instead of taking their husbands to task? I mean, a concerned wife who's figured, like Hillary Clinton has known before they even got married, that her husband was an addict and a rapist and a serial rapist, you know, would either have divorced him or got him some help.
But that,
and instead of doing that, you know, did Jackie Kennedy go after all those women?
She did go after some.
Did Labor Johnson go after all of those women?
Well,
like I said, who cares? This isn't about all of their infidelity.
Right, but
this is about what this woman who is running for president has done to other women, and here she is proclaiming herself to be a woman's advocate. And I'll just end it with one last question. What kind of a mother threatens the lives of another woman's children purely for her lust for power? That's my question.
But what would you say to people who say that you are doing this, you are a woman under duress who needs money, who is doing this
despite... I don't need
despite,
money. I'm managing.
Yeah, but who's doing this...
I could certainly... I'm beyond retirement age. I'm doing the best I can. I'm fighting foreclosure. And I've been trying to find... I've had part-time jobs along the way. I've had help from friends along the way. I'm doing the best I can under the circumstances.
Kathleen, do you think people think you're mentally unstable?
Why would you ask that?
Because I think that assertion has been made. I think people listening might say that the stories about the cat, no real hard evidence against the Clintons, because they could be prosecuted. Certainly he was.
Wait a
for
minute.
Monica.
I just gave you hard evidence against the Clintons.
But why has he never been prosecuted for this? Why is he... Bill Cosby's being prosecuted for things that happened...
Well, who said there are a number of women, there are a number of us out there who could all bring charges of Bill Clinton, again. Who says we can't?
And that may happen.
And let me tell you, it's more than the number of women who have gone public with about Bill Cosby.
Will you go...
Many more women.
That being
I
said,
mean,
will you...
Dolly Kyle's new book.
Well, will you
She'll
go...
She'll tell you about all the women.
Well, that being said, do you plan to go public against Bill Clinton?
Am I mentally unstable? No.
Well, that being said, do you plan to go legal against Bill Clinton at this point?
Do I plan to go legal against him? No, not at this point.
Okay.
I don't want anything to do with either mom. I just don't want her to be president.
But saying...
And I certainly don't want him back in the White House.
But saying negative things...
I mean, where are they going to put him on Bring Your Daughters to Work Day?
But saying negative things like that in media forums and running a website that's devoted to hurting the Clintons is being involved.
It's not... It is a website devoted to keeping her from becoming president.
Right.
She does not deserve to be president.
And you wouldn't consider...
A woman who claims to be an advocate...
But would you...
Under FBI investigation...
But you wouldn't consider...
Pretty terrible... crimes.
But wouldn't you consider that being involved in this campaign? Being involved? You say you don't want nothing to do with it, so you're not going to file charges.
It's called being involved in trying to keep her from becoming president.
Kathleen, we are way over on time, but I do thank you for doing this. I honestly do. Thank you for coming on, and I hope we can talk in the future.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. Kathleen Willie. That's all the time we have today. We're out of here.
And during the robbery, a man demanded money while displaying his